Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
It's easy when we live in a modern, prosperous society to fall into the trap of thinking that our kids really need the very best money can buy, the best education, the most out-of-school activities, or the latest gadget, especially the out-of-school activities thing. We race them around. We take them to soccer. We take them to cricket. We take them here, there and everywhere, 5 minutes there, stuck in the traffic. And you wonder, how much of that is having an impact? What sort of good are you actually doing with all of these? Well, it turns out that the gift you can give almost more easily than any other, and a gift that will stand above every other expensive horse riding lesson or circus camp, an endowment far beyond all the rest of them, is this: reading to your kids. As early as you can, read to and with your kids. Doesn't cost much. Costs a bit of time. But we're all time poor. Yeah, well, if you can't give time to your kids, then that's a tragedy. You might want to reassess that. New Australian research of almost 5,000 kids has found that reading to our kids, not prestigious schools, expensive gadgets, that's best for children's later learning success. The study showed that parents who read regularly to their toddlers have children with better language skills as they grow older, a stronger likelihood of better academic achievement, including in mathematics. The study was published in the Journal of Scientific Studies of Reading. It was a study led by the Australian Catholic University's Institute for Learning Sciences and Teacher Education. The researcher is Amina Shahayan. Well, why did you do this study?
We were interested to see if parents, when they are reading to children at toddlerhood, which is around 2 years of age, do children have better language over time? And then we became interested in their NAPLAN scores. And getting into that, we also started branching different research questions, for example, including mathematics as well as literacy skills, and looking at different SES groups of families.
So just to give that some context, the data set that you're working with allows you to go back and retrospectively interrogate, if you like, or analyse what was going on in these kids' lives. And because it's so large, you've got kids from all socioeconomic backgrounds, kids of different language and nationality groups, kids in different areas, and so on, which allows you then to make some meaningful comparisons looking at one variable, I'm gathering, and that variable is the parents who read to their kids. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes, absolutely, that is correct. And yes, the data, we have not collected the data. So it's an available database to researchers. It's called Longitudinal Study of Australian Children.
It's a very handy thing to have, because yeah, you can go back and change these variables. Well, what did you start to see as you interrogated the information?
So, like I say, the first thing was this longitudinal effect we find from parents reading to their toddlers. And we had this variable, which was how often you read to your children. So I guess when you're looking at such a sizable study, you have only one question, which, you know, sometimes we could ask more questions, but in such sizable studies, still the effects are valuable. So we see that the more often parents read to their children, these children have better language scores when they are 4 to 5, and they have better literacy scores and mathematics when they go to school at the age of around, I think, 8 to 9.
Goodness. So reading, the families where they read to their kids more often, they had better language. That's sort of understandable, I suppose. But mathematics, that's really interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is what we thought as well. So you often do expect the link from reading to language, because it's so, you know, intuitive to think when you read to your kids, they get better in language. That also made us think, well, we found the link from reading to mathematics. There are different, you know, hypotheses we can think of. One is that, well, children, the more you read to children, the more interested they become in reading and in doing all sorts of tasks which involve reading. And mathematics on its own does involve reading, nevertheless. So one way to look at it is, well, children who are read to more are just more interested in reading. They read more themselves. It's like a snowball effect. They read more, they become more interested in reading, and they read more, and they do better in all areas of school, which are very heavily reading-related.
Yes, they are.
So that is one hypothesis. But there are other things. I mean, when parents are reading is a multifaceted task. So when parents are reading, they're actually having an interaction with their children, which includes problem solving, which includes discussions about challenging concepts, learning abstract concepts, and all of these skills come into place when you're doing, you know, maths at school. So it's more like a hidden effect from shared reading or storytelling.
It's not too much, is it, to draw on other studies that we know about to say, look, when you are reading to your kids, then firstly, they feel secure. They know they're loved. They have their special bonding time with hopefully both parents, because that's actually very important as well. In those circumstances, it seems that a lot of the things around a child's life improve. Their social outcomes improve as well as academic outcomes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, we haven't had looked at this in our study, but we would expect this type of interaction and shared reading will help children's emotional development and social skills and friendship skills and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you've made the fairly bold claim that this is the most effective thing you can do, more effective than things like putting them in a fancy school or taking them to coaching. Were you able to look at those variables in the study?
Well, actually, we did. That's a good question. I'm happy you asked that. So when we did find the link between reading and children's later development, we started thinking, well, it's possible to say parents who are reading more to their children, you know, might have more time or might be the type of parents who just spend more time for their children.
Yeah.
So they might be doing puzzles at home and doing board games with children and having dinner together and et cetera, et cetera. So how do we know actually reading is important? So luckily we have this database, and they have asked lots of questions from parents. So they have a home literacy, you know, set of questions, but they also have home activities set of questions. So we started comparing the effect of shared reading with other types of activities parents do, which can be related to learning. For example, doing puzzles together, drawing together, singing songs together, or practicing music. And all of these activities on themselves are important for children's learning. Intriguing, we found that book reading stays over and above all of those activities. So we have some confidence to say, well, while doing all other activities with your children is absolutely valuable, shared reading is important above all of those activities in helping your children in the type of cognitive development they need later on to problem solve and to do better at school and so on and so forth.
I suppose you're not able to say from the data set, but I'm interested in your view as an expert. Does it matter what type of literature you're reading? And I use the word literature kind of loosely with some of the stuff that's out there at the moment. But does it matter what you're reading to your kids?
Well, absolutely. Look, of course, it does matter what you're reading to your child. But I guess the most important thing, there are two important elements in there. One is you need the child to be engaged in the task of shared reading. So it depends on what your child is interested in.
Yeah.
That is important. To find something that your child finds interesting, not something that, you know, they just want to run away. But then also you need to find something which is age appropriate. So if it's too easy, It needs to have some challenge, some level of challenge. So children enjoy hearing new words. And actually, I've realized often children don't ask, don't tell you, I don't know this word. But you can ask them, oh, do you know this word? And then they say no, and you explain to them. So the reading should be age appropriate in a way that it's not too easy, it's not too difficult, it's not too boring.
That's
and
nice.
I guess children know the answer themselves. So when you start reading to them, you know, no expert is as expert as your own child. When you read to them, you realize if they're engaged, if they're answering questions, if there are things they don't know, that is the best sign.
Oh, that's beautiful. There's one thing you probably can't help with, and that is something that's happened to all people in this position, I know. When you fall asleep reading to your own kids, I could just go, Dad, Dad, wake up, Dad.
Absolutely. That's a good sign. That means the child was actually interested. So if you're not woken up by your children, that's maybe not a very good sign.
Perfect. Aminé, thank you so much for unlocking your research to us. It's been delightful speaking with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was absolutely wonderful.
Well, I think it was our pleasure. It's Dr. Aminé Shahian. She's from the Australian Catholic University, from the Institute for Learning Sciences and Teacher Education. What great research. You've got this great database that lets you take out certain variables and match them against other variables and see how a child's success is affected by those variables. It's very sophisticated stuff. But there it is. Reading is great. And we loved it. We loved reading to our kids. I read all of the Lord of the Rings plus The Hobbit to one of our boys. It took me ages. I think it might have been 2 years by the time we got through it all because I kept falling asleep. Reading it to James, or sometimes he'd fall asleep, and then you could say, oh, did we hear this bit? Did we hear this bit? Let's go back a couple of pages. So you go back a couple of pages, then you get to a bit, oh, yeah, I remember that bit. Oh, well, let's just keep going. And the light that we got to the last page of the last of the trilogy, and I said, well, James, that's the end of the story. Was there a little tear? Yes, there was. You can bet on that.
Open House with Stephen O'Doherty.
Yes, and in the production chair tonight is Dan. Dan's still wondering what happened to the Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar. Dan, you know that book. You must know that book.
I know the first half of it, at least.
You fell asleep before the second half, did you?
It's true, but I love the story about the little tear shedding at the end of the Lord of the Rings books you were reading your kids. I think I'll cry once I get to the end of the Hungry Caterpillar.
I was the one who was crying.
Oh!
That was the point of the story.
Because you finally got your evenings back.
Oh, no, no. It was like, oh, this whole kind of, like, he grew up while I read him these books.
It's beautiful, yeah.
And I said, can you think of any other books we might read together now?
Oh, right, yeah.
And he said, oh, it's okay, Dad. I'll take it from here.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Oh, it is heartbreaking. However, we have a great relationship. He's in his 20s now. We have a wonderful relationship. He works as a journalist. And but we went to see the first Lord of the Rings movie came out where where you have the Sydney Symphony Orchestra playing the sound.
Oh, right.
And we went to that. And, yeah, I remember when we went to see the first movie. Gosh.
So they played it live?
Yes.
That's incredible.
Oh, yes. There are a lot of movies they're now doing like that. They take the soundtrack out of the original mix.
Yeah.
And then the orchestra plays the score live with a conductor conducting from the timesheet in front of them from the shot list. It's an incredible experience. So yeah, I guess my point is that you can relive all of these events over and over and over. And that Hungry Caterpillar, Dan, it turns. I don't want to spoil again. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I think it turns into a butterfly.
I was holding out for the Sydney Symphony Orchestra version of it later on, but that's all right.
That's what we should do. Perfect. Ideal. Hungry Caterpillar the Musical. I'm going to get under this.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.